This episode of Untold Stories is sponsored by SafePal. You'll hear more about them later on in this episode.
We managed to organize the first Web3 hackathon this year in Ukraine, in Kyiv. Our hackathon was held in a bomb shelter. And I also brought Vitalik Buterin to Ukraine for the first time in his life.
I'm back. Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Untold Stories. You thought you got rid of me, but you didn't. It's been a great few weeks. I had some good time to refresh and to see what's going on in the world, to follow crypto, but at the same time, read some books and take a little bit of like a break. We had a crazy, devastating hurricane here in Sarasota, in Florida, and all over Naples to Fort Myers to Northport. It's been kind of crazy here. And the macro situation has been affecting us all in big ways. Inflation is in double digits all around the world. It's been a crazy summer. And now everyone's looking towards winter. And with the energy crisis, the potential, and how does that affect crypto, Bitcoin? People ask me, Charlie, you've been around Bitcoin so long. What's going to happen? And sometimes I say the best thing to do is take a step back and to take a break and to look at things from a different perspective. And it's really important. But I missed you guys, and I missed being in the chair and talking about what's been happening in the whole crypto world. And at the same time, this Friday, October 7th, nationwide, finally, after 2 years of working on this theatrical release on this romantic comedy film with my wife, Courtney, who is starring in the movie, you'll be able to see it this Friday. And I'm going to play the 1 minute trailer here for you in a second. But theaters all over the USA this Friday, and then in a few weeks it'll be on video on demand. So go out, or if you're listening and you're in the US, please, this weekend, it really matters. Go out to the theaters, get some popcorn, buy some tickets. You're going to love the movie. Leave some reviews. It's really, really funny. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin or crypto. It's just super funny with some great actors and actresses. And you guys are going to have a great time. So please go check that out. But I'm really excited to talk about the intersection of what's happening in the world. We still have this huge inflection point. It's affecting every single person around the world. The war in Ukraine, there's a lot of craziness happening there. And we don't really understand that. That has so many ripple effects in the crypto world, in the macro world, in our personal bank accounts, but also with our friends and our family and our safety. So to talk to us about that, we have Alona. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Alona Shevchenko.
Pleasure.
You are the co-founder and operational lead of the Ukraine DAO. You're going to be talking to us about the intersection of these two things. Can you tell the listener, thank you so much for coming on Untold Stories.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor for me to be here. I never dreamed of speaking to you in the first place.
Amazing. I really appreciate that as well. So what's been going on? What have you been up to in the past like week or two? I mean, we can go back to the beginning, but what's kind of happening right now? There were some votes that were taking place. There's offensive, defensive. No one really knows what's happening. Can you kind of give an overview and how it affects us on a day-to-day?
Are we speaking about the geopolitical situation?
Yeah.
So I guess I live in a bit of a bubble, right? So all my life is centered around the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So like my info space is quite, I guess, maybe unbalanced in a way, but it's like probably understandable. And so Ukraine in particular has been under a threat of like a nuclear strike. And it's something that Russia uses in its hybrid warfare, just the threat of it. And normally I'm just super skeptical about it. So normally I just don't even want to hear anything about it because I speak to lots of experts in disinformation and they explain to me that both nuclear and chemical weapons are more than anything tools for psychological pressure, right? So that is the actual primary purpose. And so Ukrainians are very resilient by now to all these threats, but the last 2 weeks have been really, maybe the last week I would say, have been really tough, because it's like our president suddenly started talking about it in a, you know, in a different way from the way he normally does. And some very respectable Ukrainian publications started announcing that they have this intelligence data that it's highly likely. And maybe that's a bad wording, but at some point you have to take it seriously, right? And the reason it got to this point in the first place is because Russia is losing this war in every other way. And they are just not left with many, they are just not left with many options, you know, and they are trying to bring as much destruction as they can. And so when you look at it that way, it doesn't seem like a completely impossible outcome. And it's been tough, to be honest, like, I'm not gonna lie, it's been difficult, yeah.
How has the failure of the traditional banking system during this crisis negatively affected normal people?
I would say just the failure, it's a failure of the system, of the political system in general, you know. So after the World War II, there were all these international organizations set up, and there were trials, right? And there was an understanding that lessons have been learned, and hashtag never again, right? Yeah. And unfortunately this year, we all found out that, never again, we can say it, but it's like 20 euros is still 20 euros. And it's sad. And Ukrainians feel betrayed by the promises that were given to us, by the reassurances that were given to us. And in terms of like getting help for Ukraine, for some reason, for example, we were able to mobilize and to raise and transfer funds to Ukraine with crypto in a way that would never be possible with the traditional banking system. It's just impossible to transfer, like, I don't know, $4 million in 20 seconds like you can on Ethereum, which is what we did with Come Back Alive. So in that way, crypto has given us the opportunities to provide like urgent help when it was most needed, you know, and I think that was extremely valuable at that time.
You know, this is, I think, so we had, going back in my personal journey through Bitcoin and crypto, we had these major world events where people said, hey, let's use crypto for this. Let's use crypto to help. You had, going back to 2012, 13, you had Argentinian hyperinflation, you had Cyprus, you had, you know, closing off everyone's bank accounts. We had different type of events worldwide, various massacres and wars and things like that. But we didn't have the capability, the technological capability, to really look at crypto through this social impact lens, if you will. And now we can. And now all of a sudden, a bunch of people in a room can say, hey, let's create a autonomous organization potentially and see how we can help out. And so, like, bring us to that conversation with you and the rest of the team. And at what point during this crisis did you guys say, hey, maybe we could help people?
I think the story started much, much, much earlier than February 2022. I was always very upset by Ross Ulbricht's sentence. And that is how I ended up eventually at Free Ross DAO. I have two law degrees. I used to work in litigation for about 3 years. And so when I hear about cases like his one, I don't look at it probably the way a layperson does, right? So what I've found is that people are very easily manipulated into thinking someone is bad just because he's linked to A, B, and C, right? And so with Rossi, there was also like a smear campaign, and he was accused of like, what is it called? Like
murdering people, right?
Exactly, paying someone to hiring someone to murder someone. He was never charged with that, yeah. But that perception remained, and to this day, people tell me like, "Why would you support Ross? Like, he paid to kill someone." I'm like, "No, he did. Like, those people that he paid to kill, they do not exist, and he was never charged with anything like that." And that's the problem with false accusations, like that they kind of stick to that person's reputation, and it's so hard to clear that up, right? And so when I saw Frio's DAO last year, and I was working as a community manager on another project, and I was super overworked already, but when I saw that, I was like, this is finally an opportunity for me to help him in some way. It may be not significant, it may not I don't know, turn the tide, but I will contribute something to this cause that I care about. And the reason why I care about Ross is because I think whatever, like, you know, people have different views on Silk Road, but
yeah,
he doesn't deserve a double life sentence. He doesn't deserve to die in jail. That's the bottom line is that, right?
There are actual murderers and pedophiles and child molesters that got 5 or 10 years and are walking free now. Like, I saw a Reddit post the other day. It said, who are the most evil people still alive today? And if you go through that, you'd be surprised how many really bad people are still walking around free. And so My personal case was exactly during the same time. I didn't have the opportunity to really dive in and follow when I was dealing with my own criminal situation. So, but it's really, I mean, it's just a crazy situation. And so, do you think DAOs are these like social impact / philanthropic, more of like voting with my money for something I believe in? Mechanism, is this where this is going?
I do not think that we should be voting with our money. Ukraine DAO, for example, does not have a governance token, and I guess I'll have to get there in five minutes. So when Freeros DAO started, I come into this Discord. And it was early days of any like big future big DAO. They are very chaotic. There is absolute just anarchy, right? And I come into this Discord, and I'm like, it's launched by Police DAO. They'll bring in like some community managers. They'll bring some order into here. Then 2 weeks later, I join again. And there is just the same stuff happening there. And I remember I just left a message saying that if you guys need a bit of help with moderation, I can help. And they messaged me, and I just basically, all I did, and I think that is kind of advice that I would give to anyone who wants to start the journey in Web3, to just come in every day and just do something, even if it's small, just to show up consistently, right? And just, you know, suggest to do something of value. And if the other people on the team are okay with it, then just do it. And eventually you become kind of a more or less valuable person there, right? Because people know that they can rely on you showing up and moving things forward, which is often a problem with DAOs, right?
Yeah.
The guys from Frio's DAO, they did something really invaluable for me in the weeks prior to the full-scale invasion, which started on the 24th of February. Eventually, I started having really bad nervous breakdowns, and that came from the fact that I knew that this was going to happen for years in advance. So I first realized that this was likely, just about less than 9 years ago.
Oh, wow.
The way I knew it was when I saw Russian news, and I saw the way Ukrainians were portrayed in the Russian, well, it's fake news, right? And they were completely fabricated stories. And they were portraying us the way, in a way that was very similar to how Jewish people were presented to Germans in the Nazi Germany before the Holocaust. And it was like very clear parallels between that. And I have a very simple upbringing. I grew up in rural Ukraine. I went to like just a normal Ukrainian school, but I think anyone who had like history classes in school, and probably most people did, it's not that hard to like recognize it, you know?
Sure.
And so I try to tell people around me, I try to tell people here in the UK. I was doing masters at the time. I gave some talks about it, and people back in like 2015, if you said to someone in Brighton, which is like it's a hippie place in the UK, if you said to someone that Russia is becoming a fascist state, they would just straight up laugh at you. And I had no platform, like no one knew me.
Really?
Pretty much. Yeah. I had no
see that it was becoming what it has become for the past 20 years. Governments like stability. So it doesn't matter, you know, like, I hate to say it, but we tout democracy and it's all great. But really, at the same time, like, look at Egypt. Now the West is supporting Egypt. It's still the same type of autocracy or whatever, but it's just stable. We just want stability. So the West was okay with Russia because it was selling gas to Europe, financial agreements. Everything is good. They don't care who's in charge.
100%. So I always say to people that I just do not believe that 20-year-old from Ukraine could see what German or French intelligence services could not see. Everyone could see what was happening, but no one wanted drama, and no one wanted to lose connections with Russians and to lose the money that they were getting out of it, right? And that is it all snowballs. It all starts from like one bad choice, multiple people making small bad choices, and then it just snowballs into this. And so they could see what was happening. They knew what was happening. They were selling arms to Russia despite the embargo that was imposed in 2015. So everyone knew, it was all clear. Russia, what's really unique about genocide that's currently happening is that Russia announced it in advance. Normally, that doesn't happen. Normally, the side that's at fault denies it completely. Russia had the audacity to be saying it out loud that they were going to do it, and we were trying to tell everyone that's what they will do, and nobody listened. And so all these years, at that time, 2014, 2015, it was a very intense time for Ukraine. We had the Revolution of Dignity, then Russia invaded immediately. It was a very traumatizing time. And then it goes into a different stage. So this war, it never stopped, but hybrid warfare is very complex. And while the kinetic war went maybe a bit more passive, the information war was ongoing 24/7, like every day of the week, right? And when I was informed that the full-scale invasion was going to happen on the 19th of January, so it would be 6 weeks in advance. My friend who told me, she was informed by someone in she was alerted by someone in the Ukrainian security service.
Wow. And
so I did not take it seriously enough at first, but I remember I just called my parents and I told them, and I knew that they were not going to listen, because everyone in Ukraine is very desensitized to threats by now. Then I remember I started watching the news a bit more, and when I saw what was happening on the news, using that experience from back in the day, I remember I sat down for like 40 minutes, I opened websites with like major news agencies from different countries, and I felt sick, because from what I saw, it was very different from how usually things go. Normally, when Russia is aggressive towards Ukraine, everyone is deeply concerned. It's like a meme in Ukraine by now. Deep concerns, strong condemnations, and all those empty words. This time, countries were sending out their embassy staff back to their home countries. They were telling their citizens to evacuate from Ukraine. So you can tell from those actions, right, that they know something. They know that it's serious because they never do it normally. And so I started going to protests. I barely was doing any work in Firozdar. And the guys from there, they showed me so much. They just gave me so much support and love that I cannot be thankful enough to them. They let me publish an open letter about the war that was about to happen on their blog. And just every day they would send me a message, we love you, even when I was not doing the stuff that I was supposed to do, And it's really rare. I know it's really rare, both in Web 2 corporate world, Web 3, people expect you to do stuff. And then I remember the weirdest thing, and I've been reading these messages today, on the 19th of February, so 5 days before the full-scale invasion began, I messaged Matthew, who is now, he became one of the co-founders, and I say to him, I do not know why I'm messaging you. We were never close friends. But I said to him, I'm going mad. I cannot cope with this stress where you just try to tell everyone about what's about to happen. And they just dismiss it. And I also felt really a horrible feeling of guilt for not fighting hard enough this whole time to prevent this, and it was just a completely heartbreaking situation. And he suggested to me, he was like, why don't we use Web3 to help? And I say to him that someone suggested to me starting Ukraine DAO, but I do not have the resources, I do not have the connections to do it. And they helped me to get things off the ground.
Guys, I am so excited to talk about our newest presenting sponsor, SafePal. SafePal is an all-in-one solution. You got a beautiful hardware wallet. You have this amazing fireproof Cypher. You got a mobile wallet, an extension wallet similar to MetaMask. You're talking about an all-in-one solution for all of your crypto needs. Founded in 2018, SafePal is a Binance Labs-backed Singapore-based company, the venture arm, where their mission is to make crypto secure and simple for everyone. You got cross-chain swapping, trading services, and more. SafePal supports over 40 different blockchains. I mean, check this out. Look at this. If you back up your private seed in this beautiful metal SafePal backup here and you keep it in your safe, fires or water or nothing degrading over time, you should not be backing up your crypto on pieces of paper. I mean, look at this. Look at the S1 here. It's so cool. This is the hardware wallet. I'm used to using the Trezor or the Ledger wallet, but SafePal is a lot better because not only do you get the hardware wallet and the backup cipher, but you also get the mobile wallet, the extension on your Google Chrome or whatever Firefox you use. So it all works together. You don't have to worry about man-in-the-middle attacks and everything like that. You can go to safepal.com, use the coupon code Charlie, and you'll get any of these amazing products. The extension wallet is free, the mobile wallet is free, the hardware wallet and the backup are really, really well priced. It's all super safe and secure, and I love it. I mean, there's no other way you should be using your crypto than SafePal. So how do you feel different now? I mean, you're talking about activism pre-DAOs, and how is it different now? You're talking about having almost like a Web3 army, right?
The role of crypto in our particular DAO is overrated from the outside. So I think there are a few features about Ukraine DAO that are super different from other ones. And I was telling our contributors about it today. I think one of the main ones is that usually DAOs have to fight with their respective government.
Makes sense.
There's always hear about all these lawsuits and all sorts of trouble. Ukraine is so different. We are the first DAO in the world that has support on a state level.
Oh,
when I tell people
wow.
today, it's wild. And it was very funny. I was in Barcelona, this ETH Barcelona conference, and people said to me, "You know, you have support of the Ministry of Digital Transformation." I was like, "Yeah," and they said, "What are you gonna do if you ever want to like kind of go rogue and just not be associated with them anymore?" And I said, "It was so funny because to me, like, I was so proud to have been introduced to them, and no one, like, we are completely autonomous. Like, there is not no one ever told us what to do in the DAO, and there is no zero control for or zero oversight from the government about what we are doing." If like the only time
Well,
when
let
I
me ask you
speak to them
this.
is
Oh,
when I
yeah.
need support,
Well, let me ask you
like,
this. Some people are familiar with the term NGO, but they don't really know what they are. Are DAOs kind of like the Web3 version of an NGO, a non-governmental organization?
the way I see it, right? Every DAO has a very different purpose. So
Okay.
you cannot lump them together. You just a DAO in like for Ukraine DAO, a DAO is not the right term in the first place, because it's a DAO stands for decentralized autonomous organization. And about decentralization, I have my own like it's a separate a little TED talk, but TLDR would be that. Mindless decentralization that is just like kind of done for the sake of it is not good when you're being invaded by another country and there are lots of bad actors out there trying to get you. Like if
Good
in
point.
Ukraine DAO anyone could have a say, we would be hijacked immediately. And I think anyone would agree with it. So I learned a really cool term recently, recentralization, right? So like mindful centralizing. And in Ukraine DAO, we basically practice something that's like with elements of holacracy, but it's not we do not say that anyone can join us or that anyone can have a say. That would be suicidal. And so to some extent we are not completely decentralized, and I don't think we should be. And then autonomous usually implies that it's a technical term,
Well,
right?
let's talk, what is explain this governing philosophy of holacracy. I've never heard of that until today.
So holacracy is a system of self-management that the purpose of it is this. When you have a team, normally you have like a top-down hierarchy, right? And the boss is in charge and he's making decision or she's making decision. And then let's say one employee makes they have an idea. But because the boss has his own maybe cognitive biases that do not let him see the benefits of that idea, they dismiss it. And that loses, then the value is lost, right? Of whatever benefit that could have brought for the organization. Holacracy implies that the aim of it is that you can extract that value from the employee that or from a member that maybe not like it
Yeah.
basically tries to balance out all this like power imbalance within within the team, but it has its own limitations. And like my personal view is that no particular approach and no particular framework is going to work in a complex system seamlessly. You always need to think about what is it that you're trying to do, and you need to apply the whatever principles or frameworks that you know of in order to make it work. So I'm not advocating for
Sure,
holacracy
sure.
instead of something else.
I think the point is what we're gathering here is that everything has to be fluid and organic. What DAOs are, what crypto is, what Web3 is, social impact, activism, the relationship between people, organizations, governments, things, it's all changing. It's been changing since shit, like 2011, over the last 10 years. But it wasn't until the pandemic that really was that black swan event combined with the Ukraine crisis that we're seeing all these different things kind of come to light. And we're seeing people act in different ways. I mean, look at the initial reception for you guys. I think you guys were able to raise over like $7 million in the first 5 days. The t people want these tools. So like, what's the next step? How are you guys using these the different tools that you have to really show as an example of how things can be done in a better, more transparent and fair way?
First of all, almost interrupted you. We do not call it Ukraine crisis. That's wrong
Thank you for
terminology.
correcting me.
I'll always correct it. Every Ukrainian will do this. It's called I well there are separate options, but it should not be called conflict. It should not be called a crisis. It can be called a war. When you use war, Russia needs to be put first, right? Because when you say Ukraine war, it creates this like this
No, it's
perception that it's like Ukraine's fault.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I don't know what else
Exactly.
to call it. Yeah. Fucking invasion. That's what it is.
I made a Notion page. It's called Covering Ukraine as a Journalist, and it has like all of these like terms and like the most ridiculous ones are used by all these like international charities. Once they called it volatile situation, and I said that a volatile situation is something that can be seen on Russian stock markets.
Yeah, so you're inside this bubble, right? I'm on the outside of it as n the rest of the world. But if you look at it, we're all in various information bubbles, in all information silos. And the biggest frustration we have every single day is how to take the information in the news and decipher it, right? Into what exactly is really going on. US presidential elections, inflation, energy crisis, pandemic. All these different things where we're constantly just lied to, or the agenda or the narrative is changing. You know what the Western public perception of everything is. You just corrected me. Ukraine crisis. It's not the Ukraine crisis. It's the Russian invasion of Ukraine. What else are we getting wrong? Like, has Western attention shifted or changed?
Oh God! Wow, you just opened like a Pandora box to me
Good,
because
we have time.
it's the most like painful subject for me. But let me go back a little bit to DAOs for activism. I think like what's unique about Ukraine DAO and what I would love to see in more in DAOs is seeing them as something that's beyond a fundraising tool. And so when I started Ukraine DAO, the purpose of my initial idea was to have like a hub of kind of Ukraine-centric hub of coordinating Ukraine donations. And Ukraine is a very crypto-friendly country, as I said, and many respectable Ukrainian charities, they've been accepting crypto for years, which is like super unusual for other countries, right? That's what it started from, but then it very quickly like grew into this like huge community, and now we have about 13 or 14 working groups, and they include a translation and writing pod. We call them pods, they produced hundreds and hundreds of amazing translations and subtitled videos that we just share them on social media, and they get huge amounts of engagement. And we use it to educate people about what's really going on in Ukraine. And that has nothing to do with crypto at all. It
Sure,
just happens
sure.
under this umbrella of Ukraine DAO, right? In the same way, our fact-checking pods is the most prominent and the most active group right now in Ukraine DAO. They have nothing to do with crypto. And I think what's unique about Ukraine DAO is that It's the first one that I know of, DAO, that you do not need to know anything about Web3 to join it. And the reason why we set it up from the very beginning was because I could see the bigger problem beyond lack of funding. The bigger problem was the information warfare that Russia was waging on Ukraine. And if you want a disinformation expert to join your team, I'm sorry, but you cannot expect for them to be onboarding to Web3. And you cannot be expecting a Ukrainian person who may be super knowledgeable and they can be very helpful to you. You cannot be expecting for them to be on studying blockchain during genocide. It's just not realistic, right? And so the way we said, and also more than anything, I wanted to avoid any financial speculation around the DAO. And so that's why we don't have a governance token. And I think in the future, governance, token-based governance, the way it is now, like voting with your money, as you said, I think it will become a thing of the past. And people in the early days, people were saying to me that I was crazy, and they would say to me but when are you becoming a real DAO? And I was like, we are a real DAO. And they were just really, really skeptical. And then I came across this thread by Will. He's the co-founder of Syndicate. And he, in that thread, I found it absolutely fascinating. I could not shut up about that thread. I'll send it to you as well.
No,
But
we had him on the
today,
show.
awesome. He wrote a thread about the original concept of a DAO. And what I found completely mind-blowing when I read the thread is that Ukraine DAO developed exactly like he describes in that thread, according to that original concept of the DAO,
Grassroots.
without us reading ever that thread. And I just found it so interesting. And I think that's the kind of secret behind us being more efficient and more agile than DAOs normally are.
What a crazy thread. I mean, we had the CEO of Syndicate on the show, and it really blew my mind because, I want to take a step back, and I don't call it like, you know, you should, you know what, we can bringing it back to a conversation that I was having a few months ago. This is a different type of mapping relationships between people, and I think that ultimately is what it's coming to be. So you're talking about the ability for folks not to like vote with their money, but vote maybe, or like to show their support into something that's not just through joining like some sort of traditional membership organization that ends up leading to nowhere. This is the Web3 version of that.
I remember in the first few weeks, I was trying to set everything up right, and I was very lucky to become friends with the dad of Vitalik Buterin, Dima
Yeah.
Buterin. He's been mentoring me ever since, and I'm really grateful that I have him in my life. And when I asked him for help with set, organizing Ukraine DAO, the first thing he asked was "Do you have a written up? Do you have a written up page where you would set out your values?" And I was like, "No, why do we need it?" I didn't, I'd never done anything of this scale before. And I was like, "Why do you, is this an urgent thing?" And he was like, "Yeah." And I started kind of doing research on how to actually write them up so that they're not just some bullshit that you wrote and nobody cares. They really reflect our values that we have. They really reflect who we are. And we only onboard people who who are a good culture fit in accordance with those values. And that's been the most helpful thing that I think Ukraine DAO has done in terms of its organization. And so he also recommended me this book that's called The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni. And I didn't read it for the longest time. And then once I did, I really regretted that I didn't read it before. I don't know if you've ever read
No, but
it.
I'm going to
You
check it
have?
out. What's it called?
The Advantage. I'll send you the link. And the book basically states that the most important thing that your team needs to have a long-lasting impact is organizational health. And organizational health means minimal politics, minimal confusion, a lot of clarity, and a lot of clarity often means just repetition, right? So kind of drilling it into people what you are about, and something else. But basically, there has to be cohesion in the team. And when you don't have that cohesion, and I think that's the problem with a lot of DAOs, is that someone will spend 4 days writing a proposal. One person comes in, maybe he's not even from this community. He comes in, he criticizes everything, and then nothing happens. That's what makes DAOs so inefficient and so kind of slow and ineffective. And that's how we've been avoiding it so far.
There are certain types of relationships that we have, like even family organizations, like family units of 5 or 10 people that have to work with each other on a week-to-week basis. And there are friendships or different type of organizations, like even businesses or but when you have organizational clarity, you have less drama and less politics. So because you spend so much time focusing on different types of strategies around this through this like DAO effort, you're really showing how, because you have, and this is kind of what I've been summarizing over the last hour or so, is that because you have a lot more clarity between your organization about how to do things and how everyone works with each other, and the culture is a fit, that you're really showing how charity, war relief, evacuation efforts can be organized better through how 100%. You're doing it than through traditional methods.
100%. People often ask, how do people make decisions in Ukraine now? The only proposals that are written up in writing, actually, that are like formalized, right, are the ones that are like finance related. But the fascinating thing is, when you onboard people to the DAO on the basis of that of them being a good culture fit, there is very little need for governance solutions, because they don't actually have that much conflict that's unhealthy in its nature, right? Sure. So we debate things a lot, and diversity of opinion is like very much encouraged. But when we argue with each other, because there is cohesion in the team, when I'm arguing with another team member or they are arguing between themselves, they know that they are genuinely on the same side. They're not just on the same side on paper, but they're arguing to find out what's true. They're not arguing to find out who is right and who is wrong. And that's a crucial difference, I think.
Alona Shevchenko, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the past hour and talking to me today. How can my listeners follow you and get involved?
Ukraine_DAO. We are very, very unconventional project. And something that I also want people to know is that we are currently helping Iran DAO to launch. And Iran DAO started when my friend Jaden, she messaged me, and she said she has this amazing Iranian friend who is also from London, based in London like me. And she said she's looking to set up Iran DAO, but she doesn't have extensive experience with them. And she asked if I could help. And so we've been working with Morello. She is an incredible woman. Like when I met Morello, I haven't met her in person yet, but we will meet this week. I'm really looking forward to it. And it's like the solidarity and the kind of the sense of, we just hit it off immediately when we started speaking, because we're going through the same, like the root cause of our problems is essentially the same. And it's really inspiring for me to be to be able to learn from her and to share my experience with her. She's amazing. And so something that I want for people to know is that Iran DAO is coming.
I think that in the future, we're going to have so many different types of these organizations, and then I'm excited to see how they all work together in the future and how they band together to maybe like create temporary DAOs consisted of all other DAOs. And like, you're going to see, it's just so exciting the next few years. I'm excited to have you back on the show in 6 months from now. Hopefully we're celebrating some positivity with the ending of that invasion and things like that. So let's keep
Ukraine's victory.
In.
We'll be celebrating
yeah,
Ukraine's victory.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Before I leave, because otherwise Kyiv Tech Summit friends will kill me. We managed to organize the first Web3 hackathon this year in Ukraine, in Kyiv. Our hackathon was held in a bomb shelter. And I also brought Vitalik Buterin to Ukraine for the first time in his life.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
Thank you for having me.